You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.
It's going to be like Lego. If this happens, insert everything here. If that happens, insert everything here.
I love your analogies.
They're terrible.
Two games and $50,000 later, Elliot Friedman. Welcome to 32 Thoughts, the podcast, presented as always by the GMC Sierra, Merrick Friedman, Dom Shramati. And before we get to the Philadelphia Flyers and their head coach, you have a special shout out, I understand.
Yes, so I want to congratulate a certain podcast listener, a dedicated listener of the podcast. On Sunday was the California High School Division I State Championships, and Fairmont Academy won in double overtime.
Ooh.
The winning goal was scored off a faceoff that was won by Cole Bieksa.
No way! That's amazing.
Cole Bieksa with the faceoff win.
Did Dad make it? He was telling me he was getting on the early flight to get there. Do we know if Kevin made it? Oh, great.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was the only bad thing about Kevin getting out there is it meant no Saturday night post-trip to the bar because he had an early flight and he had to get going.
That's great. Oh, wow.
Congratulations to Cole and his teammates at Fairmont Academy for overcoming undoubtedly questionable bench management to win game in double overtime. Cole with the face-off win that led to the winning goal, the championship winner.
The resilience of those athletes in the face of such horrible training all season long, I really have to hand it to those young men. Well done,
Cole. Yes, congratulations
to
Fairmont Academy. Yes.
Love to start with some good news. That's fantastic. Okay. Meanwhile, Saturday, Elliot, Philadelphia and Tampa, Elliot, tilted rink, Elliot, and a lighter Philadelphia Flyers bench by the end of it, and a lighter by way of what's in his pocket, John Tortorella. Two-game suspension, $50,000 fine for refusing to leave the bench when instructed by Wes McCauley. Your thoughts on this one?
So we were all laughing about this. Obviously, the Tampa players who were there being honored as part of the 03-04 team and Dave Andrechuk and Brad Richards being inducted into the Lightning Hall of Fame. If you saw the video, they were laughing at it. All of us on social media were laughing at it. We were laughing at it. And at about just late in the first period of our late game, which was Winnipeg-Vancouver, I got a call from someone who said, stop laughing. This is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
And I said, you're kidding me. Like, you know, to be honest, if I was a referee in this situation, I'd just roll my eyes at it. But obviously it was taken very seriously. And Tortorella, who I think has been fined 12 times and I think suspended three times, got the two-game suspension. Now, I'm going to say right away, I think that's a stiff punishment, a really stiff punishment. I would have understood a one-game suspension, but two at a time where the Flyers are trying to make the playoffs, that's no joke. That's a big suspension. But, you know, the thing that stands out to me the most here is that this is where I really think the NHL's refusal to allow referees to speak really hurts the referees, really hurts them. Look, someone said to me, if a player did that, refused to leave the playing field, they would be in deep doo-doo also, and coaches should be no different. That's fine. I can accept that rationale. But you remember when Jay Woodcroft got thrown out this year, I was like, what? Like, what for? Why? And, you know, I had to do the digging and say, and find out that Kevin Pollock, who threw Woodcroft out of that game, had refereed or officiated 1,500 games and never thrown anyone out before. So you say, okay, that's not a referee who's a hothead. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, in the last couple of weeks, there were a couple of coaches were fined. Don Granato was one, and Sheldon Keefe was another. And Granato actually got fined on a play where Nick Cousins later got hit with a diving $2,000 penalty. So in some ways, it really justifies Granato's reaction. But this one in particular, again, if I was an official, I would want the opportunity to tell my side of the story. And the reason is, I think that plays like this, if you watch that game and you were familiar with what was happening, this is what I think occurred. And nobody has told me I'm wrong about this. I think there was a young referee who got a bit overwhelmed in the moment, which can happen. And Wes McCauley, who became the focal point of all of this, stepped in and said, I'm going to protect my teammate.
Brandon Schrader is the referee's name. That was who was working.
Okay. So in a lot of ways, I have respect for McCauley for this because he's trying to stand in for his teammate, which is what hockey and sports is supposed to be all about. However, because nobody will say this, it just makes it look like the referees are thin-skinned and made a whole situation worse. Like, I think if, like, the referees are thin-skinned, you can't criticize them, they're not accountable, and they made this situation worse. If Wes McCauley or Schrader is allowed to come out and say, look, we had a situation here, and we didn't want to let it escalate, and it was getting too far out of control, and Tortorella has to leave the playing field or the ice surface quicker, maybe not everybody would agree, but I think everybody would say, okay, at least we've got an answer here, and at least the officials are accountable. Because a pool reporter, and that's what this would have been, that's the way the other sports do it, would say, hey, you know, what was your guy's fault in all of this? And, you know, they could simply say, look, we understand the situation got out of control. Maybe there were some mistakes made here, but you can't do that. But we don't get any of that. And I think situations like this, they erode the referees and officials, they take a beating all the time. That's the name of the game. And not all of it is deserved. But when you're doing this and you can't even hear from them and can't get an explanation, like I said, I think it erodes the confidence in the officials even more. And again, if I was an official in the sport, I would want, in a case like this, to be able to say, this is why this was a problem. And I think if it was a one-game suspension, I think maybe people, actually, I'm not sure the Flyers fans would have been okay in any situation.
No
but
chance.
Maybe people would have said, all right, but two, without an explanation, I think that puts officiating in a bad spot. And I'll say it for the third time, because I really do believe it. I don't think it's good for the officials when Tortorella gets this serious a suspension at this time of year when his team is fighting for the playoffs, and you could make a real case that the whole thing was created by just an official had a bad night. I mean, it can happen to everybody. We've all had bad nights. But because they're not seen as accountable like Tortorella is getting this suspension, I don't think it's good for the officials. I don't. I really don't. I think it erodes confidence in them.
Do you think this is something that officials want? Like, do they want to be available afterwards to comment on situations like this? Like, first of all, I would expect that someone like Wes McCauley would relish the opportunity to talk about it. I don't know how many other officials would. Maybe there's a lot. Maybe there's not. I'm not sure. I'm not sure where Stephen Walkham, the head of officiating in the NHL, is at on it either. But do you think, again, this is just, you know, check the thermometer here. What's the temperature with the officials? Do you think that they want that opportunity to explain themselves?
Boy, that I have to tell you is a great question because I get mixed answers.
Same.
I get really mixed answers. Like you're friendly with a bunch of officials. I'm friendly with a bunch of officials and they're hilarious people. Like some of them are really funny and they've got good stories to tell. And I think in front of a microphone in a moment like that, I think they'd be excellent. I really do. But I think there are others who would prefer not to do it. And I think overall, it's pretty clear by this point, the league doesn't want them to do it. So I think it almost becomes a crutch in the sense that, oh, the league doesn't want us to do it. So there's not much, you know, we can say. But I'll say this. I think there are some officials who would be really good at it. They're confident people. They've got good senses of humor. And again, I think it would go a long way. It's like, what's your line when you make a mistake? What's your line?
When you mess up, fess up, and dress up.
To me, that's 75% of the battle. 75% of the battle. Because people can say, I get it. It happens. Everybody has a bad day. But when you create the impression that you're not accountable, it makes situations like this worse. And, you know, Tortorella's a polarizing guy. There's no question about that. But because this happened in a situation where a couple calls went sideways, it makes him look like the victim in this case. And I don't think that's what the NHL or the officials want.
Okay. A quick lighter note on this one, Elliot.
Yeah.
You know what I was really thinking? Because I'm like, what's you, that? I'm watching this and I'm howling.
I thought it was hilarious.
I am laughing so hard. Like, I can't believe it. And I'm listening to Randorf and Engblom and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And oh my, and Dave Randorf says like, he's not leaving. And then I just like burst out. Like I'm laughing. And finally he relents and he leaves. You tell me whether there wasn't a tiny part of you that thought he's coming back out like Bobby Valentine.
I actually wondered about that, like in a mask, in the Groucho Marx mask or something like that.
Anything like that? The glasses, the fake mustache like Bobby Valentine.
A trench coat.
Because it was just so hilarious. I'm like, okay, how much stupider can we make this right now? Oh, Bobby Valentine. He's got to go full Bobby Valentine, please.
Okay. A couple other things. You watch, first of all, the Flyers are going to lean into this. They are going to lean into this. First of all, you've got Daniel Hilferty saying he's going to pay for the fine.
Yep.
No, which somebody joked with me saying that probably got Tortorella an extra game. The Flyers are going to lean into this with the us against the world mentality. Everyone's against us. They are going to lean right into this. You know, I'll say this too. Someone said to me, the guy that he's rooting for the most in all this is Brad Shaw, who will become the head coach for the two games that Tortorella misses. Brad Shaw is one of the best coaches in the NHL. You ask those Flyers defensemen this year, guys like Travis Sanheim, about what a huge, huge help he's been this year. And they said to me that he hopes the Flyers go 2-0 because he really thinks that Brad Shaw deserves a coaching opportunity as a head in the National Hockey League. So, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Do you remember what the Philadelphia Flyers did last year towards the end of the season? Then they just bring up Bradshaw, and I'll throw Rocky Thompson into that mix as well. Remember John
they started throwing them out there, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just to see, like, I guess it was sort of a test to see, A, how they would do, how players react, what's the relationship between, you know, these assistant coaches and their players. Now, I'm not going to go full conspiracy theory and say they're testing to see who could coach this Flyers team when John Tortorella takes his inevitable suspension. But I just thought that was really interesting. They did that last season, and I did think about that today. And then you mentioned Bradshaw. I didn't write it down, so I'm glad you mentioned it. It's not as if they haven't sort of test-driven assistant coaches already, Elliot.
That's true.
Okay, so we'll see where this one heads. Let's stay in Pennsylvania. And we're going to get to some of the trades here in a couple of moments, but there's some more immediate pressing stuff right now, and we'll get there. The Pittsburgh Penguins, their last three games specifically, 6-0 against the Capitals, 5-1 against the Boston Bruins, 4-0 Sunday afternoon against the Edmonton Oilers, outscored by a score of 15-1. This has been a tough stretch, to say the least. That's giving it a soft landing for the Pittsburgh Penguins. We made a lot about the Sidney Crosby comments after the Jake Guentzel trade. What are your thoughts now on what's next with Pittsburgh?
It's just unbelievable to see them wave the white flag this week, eh? Guentzel gets traded, as you said, they get blown out like that. Just the first shift, you know, Letang throws the puck right down the middle and McDavid intercepts and goes in and scores on Sunday. It's like the game was over 25 seconds in. You never seen that. I think there's a lot of players in the league who really feel for Crosby. They really do. Cause I think that's just how high the respect is for him. I was thinking about this on Saturday, Jeff, but this is the first time in Crosby's career. And you think this is 18 years. He was drafted 18 years ago this summer, that the Pittsburgh Penguins are going backwards. Just imagine it. 17 and a half years, the team is always going forward. From the day he was drafted, the Penguins were obviously not a very good team, but it was up, 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 up. They won a Stanley Cup 3 years after he was drafted. They continued to push forward. They won two more. Then even after they started to fall, they kept on adding. They never stopped adding. When it looked like Malkin and Letang could be gone, they re-signed and they both came back. And now for the first time ever, the organization has waved the white flag of surrender. Mm-hmm. And after Guentzel was traded, the players followed suit. And I've never seen this before. Since he's been acquired, we have never, ever seen this. And I think it hit Crosby and some of those other players who've been around for a long time like an absolute wet towel in the face. Like, it is a harsh, harsh slap. And I think these guys are shell-shocked because they've never seen it before. Now, this led to a lot of questions about Crosby. I have to say this. I just don't see him going anywhere. I definitely didn't see it at the deadline, and I don't see it going anywhere this summer. I could totally be proven to be wrong, because now, instead of it being conceptual, it's actually happening. And you never know how someone's going to react to that. But I really do believe that, and I said this a couple weeks ago on the podcast, that there will be an extension for him, a short one with a big number. Earlier on the podcast, I think a couple weeks ago, I guessed 3 times 10.5. I had other people say to me, they bet it's going to be 2 times 10.5. But that's kind of where a lot of people are guessing. Mm-hmm. I find it very hard to believe, Jeff, that after Letang signed with term and Malkin signed with term, that he's going to walk on them and not see it through to some degree with them. Like, I think if Crosby wants to, if he walked into Kyle Dubas's office any day and said it's time, they would do what they had to do to put him in a place where he's going to be happy. But I just find it hard to believe that it's going to be now. I think he's loyal to the organization. He's loyal to Letang and Malkin. I want to think he gives them a chance to see if they can, what Dubas can do in the next year or two. Again, I'm willing to concede I may be wrong on this. I've got no inside information. It was a big topic of discussion this week. You know, I was getting DMs from people saying they were hearing rumors that Crosby could get traded now. I was like, I don't believe there's any chance that's going to happen. They said, well, what about this summer? And as we sit here on Sunday night, March the 10th, days before the Ides of March, Jeffrey.
Very nice touch.
I find it very hard to believe that he's going to go anywhere in the short term. I think he gives them a chance to see it out. Now, Jeff, I also think this. I think the goal was for a long time to keep Guentzel. I think they were going to try to trade other people and keep Guentzel. But I think they realized the value for some of these other people wasn't as high as they'd hoped. And that if they really wanted to add pieces, it was going to have to be Guentzel. I think the players were hoping Guentzel could stay. And I think Guentzel was hoping he could stay. I think he had people in his corner that were doing what their job is, which is like, Jake, you got to have eyes wide open here. But I really believe they wanted to keep him and move others. And then reality hit them about what some of the worth of those other players were. And they realized if anyone was going to have to go to get them pieces, it was going to have to be him.
What should we read into? And again, there are a couple conditional draft picks, although the Carolina Hurricanes need to make it to the Stanley Cup final to see some of these conditions actualized. What should we read into the fact that this was not a Guentzel trade based on draft picks, but players? Now, albeit young players, but still actual bodies, living, breathing, young hockey players here. Does that indicate to you that they understand that they're rebuilding this thing, but they don't want to start from the root to get to the fruit? They want it moved along a little bit quicker.
Well, I think anybody who'd been paying attention knew that was the case, that they did not want the trade to be based on draft picks. I said from about a week and a half ago that I really thought Carolina was the team to beat, that Carolina had the prospect pool that Pittsburgh liked the most. They thought of all the teams that would be interested, they had the deepest amount of players that they could go get. And I never wavered from that. Now, I believe they knew, had a good idea what Carolina was willing to do. And I think they shopped it other places. They shopped it to Vegas, which is what Dubas is paid to do. I believe they shopped it to Vegas. I believe they shopped it to Vancouver. I believe they shopped it to the Rangers and anybody else who was in on this. And I think the Rangers, at the end of the day, were the team that was the best position to beat it. However, I don't believe, I'm not sure which one it was. Like, people know, like, the Rangers have a couple great prospects, Othman, Perreault.
Yep.
I don't know which one we're talking about here. I keep hearing different things. And at this time of year, there's so much noise. You've got to be careful. However, I believe that there was some, I absolutely 100% believe there was somebody, if the Rangers had thrown them in, they could have gotten Guentzel and the Rangers didn't put that player in. Like, whichever one it was, the Penguins wanted them, and the Rangers said no, and ultimately Carolina got the player. I really do think that if anybody was going to beat Carolina, it was probably New York with one or two particular prospects that the Penguins had asked for.
Okay, really bizarre time for the Pittsburgh Penguins right now. And, you know, one of the one player that I do wonder about through all of it, Elliot, because I'm with you on Crosby and his decision for his future. I'm one of those people that believes 12:01 Eastern, July 1st, there's a contract, here's the pen, they're getting it done. I wonder about Erik Karlsson through all of it. That's the one guy that I keep coming back to. There's a commitment from Malkin, the commitment from Chris Letang. That's the group that stayed. The one that I do wonder about is Erik Karlsson. No question attached to any of this. That's just, I'll just lob that out there as my own feeling. That's the one guy that I wonder about here and his future with the Pittsburgh Penguins. I just don't know.
Well, it's not going to be an easy one to move. It definitely isn't.
Oh, I know.
And you know, I'll say this. I think there's going to be a lot of focus on Ottawa. Like, if there's one team that you would think would consider it, it would be them with Daniel Alfredsson there. Ottawa, I think, did a lot of groundwork. And I think Ottawa had a lot of conversations, not only about, you know, they made some subtractions, but I also think they want to add. And people who are going to make them better right away. It's ever since I wrote that about the possibility, just in my head, of Karlsson going back, there's been a lot of feedback to me about people who think it would be a good idea and people who think it wouldn't be a good idea. But if it's not Ottawa, it's hard. And don't forget, Karlsson has a lot of control here. It's hard to see where it makes sense. I think the Senators are going to be a really, really busy team in the offseason. I think they had a lot of conversations that will kind of get punted into the summer. I know that I had people asking if I made a Freudian slip on the show on Saturday night. No, that was not intentional. That was just a slip. But I do think they had conversations about the future.
Okay.
Oh, by the way, I have to say, before we leave Pittsburgh, you know who I felt bad for on the weekend?
Someone in Pittsburgh? Mike Sullivan, for one. I felt terrible for Sullivan.
Well, someone who played against them, Calvin Pickard.
Why?
Because he had to leave that game for a minute in the second period. He lost the shutout.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry. I'm like, why? Why? That's the second time he's done that to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I know, but he loses the shutout, unfortunately. It's like on Saturday night, Demko and DeSmith, they don't get DeSmith. The shutout. It's a team shutout, which it's really... So Pickard has to leave the game for basically a minute and a half of gameplay. And yeah. He loses the shutout. And by the way, since we mentioned it, Demko, I think he's going to miss a little bit of time. I don't know exactly what's going on here, but I don't think it's his groin. I don't think it's that. I think it's something else, and we all just have to get to the bottom of it. But from what I understand, it's not disastrous, and it's probably even better for Vancouver that they're going to be forced to rest him a little bit.
Well, that was the one concern, right? And we had talked about this a couple of different times. You know, the one thing after deadline, once Vancouver's business is all done and they've made their team, find a way to rest that Thatcher Demko. Okay, Vegas. Whether it's Noah Hanifin, whether it's Anthony Mantha, whether it's Tomas Hertl, or whether it's LTIR. Vegas, very much in all the headlines. And I'll tell you, Elliot, again, this is very unscientific, but just being around minor hockey rinks this weekend, you know what everybody wants to talk about? How are the Vegas Golden Knights doing this, and how come their team can't do this as well? Your thoughts on Kelly McCrimmon, the Vegas Golden Knights, and what they're able to pull off at deadline?
Well, I think the number one thing that has to be mentioned here, because without this, it doesn't exist. In just 6 years, basically, they have turned their organization into a franchise that people want to play for.
Oh yeah,
they could be as
aggressive. Part of that's the city.
No. It's not the city of Vegas. It's that Vegas and suburbs are a great place to live. Okay, but there are a lot of great places to live in the NHL, a lot. But you have to turn yourself into a destination that people are willing to bend or contort themselves to play for you. And Vegas has done that. In a very short period of time, they have done that. Like, you think about expansion teams in other sports, how many times do expansion teams in other sports turn themselves into either champions or desired locations that quickly? Like, the only one I can think of in recent memory is the Arizona Diamondbacks. I think they won the World Series in their third or fourth season. And plus, it's Arizona. People really like living there. Other than that, it's been really hard. And Vegas has done that. So that's number one. None of this happens without people wanting to play and live there. You know, Kelly McCrimmon had an interesting comment the other day. He says, we pay. And that is true. They are unafraid to pay money. They're unafraid to give up their draft picks. You take a look at all their first round draft picks in their history, whether selected or not selected. So if you make trades for them, you can argue about whether or not other teams get fair value. But the fact is, McCrimmon's not afraid to trade, for example, number one picks. You look at the history of their number one picks, whether or not they've drafted players or they haven't made the picks yet, they'll give up those picks. They trust themselves to identify players, and they're aggressive. They make hard decisions. Not always popular. Hard decisions aren't, but they're unafraid to make them. And I think when you add the fact that it's a no-tax state, a great place to live, the team's been successful, you've created a situation where all of the advantages are pointing in your direction. And I think the Golden Knights see that, and they are aggressive because of it. I think that's what it comes down to. They see that players want to play there, and they push that aggression. Like, Noah Hanifin said he wanted to go to the East Coast. Well, now they're going to bet that he's going to get his taste of Vegas, and he's going to say, you know what? My buddy Jack Eichel's here, no tax state. This sunshine all year round, this isn't so bad. And I just don't think that they would be, like, number one, forget the salary cap, forget everything else. They wouldn't be able to do any of this if it hadn't become a destination.
Okay. So here becomes one of the questions, and you sort of winked at this on Saturday as well. What's the biggest misgiving that people have about this one? And I'm talking about people in the game, people in the NHL. I'm talking about at the ownership level as well. What's the issue here with Vegas?
I think the issue is here is that a lot of it is simply competition. These are people who want to beat Vegas. And like, we've seen this movie before. Players get injured, they replace them, and they use it to their advantage. But again, I don't have a problem with that. If I was a manager, I would do the same thing. Like, Tampa Bay did the same thing, and Kucherov was laughing at it on the podium as they were celebrating the Stanley Cup. And also, don't forget, a couple years ago, Vegas missed the playoffs because of this.
Correct, yeah.
You know, they ran into injury troubles, and they went from a sure playoff team to a team that missed the playoffs, especially because of the injuries in goal. The league was really hard on them in terms of saying, no, you got to get these guys back in. So they have walked both lines of this edge. They've walked the line of the successful edge, and they've walked the line of the unsuccessful edge where they've fallen into the abyss. So it's gone both ways for them. Look, I think this, for example, you know what text I got on Sunday? Colorado comes out and they say, Logan O'Connor's out for the season. And oh, by the way, Landeskog, he won't be back till about May 10th. If we get that far, Landeskog, May 10th at best. And, you know, people are texting me. They're like, see, they're telling us what Landeskog's injury is and what his timeline is, and we're not sure about Mark Stone. Well, while that's true, again, the injury that Stone suffered with his spleen is you can't be sure. However, we all know this. Jeff, if he shows up for game one of the playoffs, it's going to be crazy. Like it's going to be absolutely crazy.
So what
someone said to me was,
yeah.
And it was more than one person said to me is, you can't do it in this CBA, but what about when they do the next one in a couple of years? And I thought this was a very fair point. How does a guy on LTIR not able to play in game 82, but suddenly, 2 days later, game one of the playoffs, I'm fine now. I can go. And that's what they said. If a player on LTIR can't come back in the regular season, why should they be able to come back for 2 or 3 days later and say, oh yeah, those extra 2 or 3 days, that's what got me over the hump. And I don't know what the level of support is going to be for this, but I'm curious to see if it goes anywhere in the next CBA discussions.
I'm just thinking about it from the National Hockey League Players Association point of view. What would they say about that? If you're on LTIR during the regular season, right up into the end, you can't play in the playoffs. I cannot see the Players Association.
I'm not saying the full playoffs, but what about like a set time? What if you say, for example, if you can't play game 82, what if they said you got to miss 4 games or you got to miss 7 games around?
You know what? You know what my concern would be? I would make that a safety issue and say that players would be rushing back when they're still hurt. And I don't
doesn't
think
that happen anyway?
That.
Doesn't
it
that
does,
happen anyway?
It does, but this is encouraging.
You can't.
This is,
you
this
can't,
is encouraging. Oh,
you, I completely throw that out as irrelevant because that's what happens anyway.
But Elliot, hang on a second here. This is directly related to them playing in the playoffs. And what about a situation?
Yeah, but that happens anyway.
But hang on, think about this.
I know exactly what you're saying, but Jeff, I think it's irrelevant because that's the way everybody is wired.
Regardless of the nature of the injury?
I don't know.
I honestly can't see the Players Association going for that.
I may be
way off base. And if this is something that's going to be collectively bargained, then the PA is one half of that discussion. I cannot see them going for that. I cannot see the PA going for that one.
Well, maybe not, but I think collective bargaining is all about bigger picture things, right? Like where would that rank in the overall things that the PA would want? So, and now people say to me, well, the salary cap should extend into the playoffs. And here's the problem with that. And Ken Holland brought that up when they were bringing the salary cap in and everybody backed off because they remembered he was right. You'll remember in the 2002 playoffs when Toronto went to the Eastern Conference Final against Carolina and lost, the Maple Leafs had like 10 guys injured, right?
Yep.
And Holland said, what if that happens to you and you can't field a team in the playoffs? You're not going to want that. Yep. And he was right. Nobody wanted that. So that's why there's no cap in the playoffs, which I understand. I get that. But to me, Jeff, what you're bringing up, it's completely irrelevant because that's the way everyone's wired anyway.
Let me swing back to the ownership conversation quickly. Then I want to move on here. Ownership and no state tax teams. This is something that's come up every now and then, and we've always sort of shrugged it off and said, c'est la vie. You know, you allow a team in Texas, you allow teams in Florida, you allow a team in Tennessee, you allow a team in Nevada. This is just baked
Washington.
Into the pie. What, is there the beginnings of a movement of concern for competitive balance around no state tax teams?
Someone told me there is on the weekend, and the Players Association, I don't think, will have anything to do with it, which I understand. I think that's a bigger issue than the one you just raised. And someone said to me that if it's ever going to change, it's going to have to change at the ownership level because those are the people that Bettman listens to the most. And what their argument is that there's some pretty aggressive projections for where the cap is going in the next few years. Mm-hmm. Even with the local television issues at places like Bally's, which have cost some teams about $10 million, I think, the revenue projections are pretty aggressive and therefore the cap projections are pretty aggressive. But they think that's going to give these no tax state teams even more of an advantage. And the teams use it quite hard. Like, you take a look at the, a couple of people said to me, you take a look at the contract that Forsling just signed in Florida.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think he signs for if he's a UFA in a tax state?
Yeah, more than that, of course.
It's not 575. Like, it's considerably higher than that.
I'm just, so, as a pause, I'm kind of surprised that it took this long for a team like the Florida Panthers to do the same thing that the Tampa Bay Lightning have been doing for years.
Because they weren't as good an organization.
Like, I understand that.
That goes back
winning,
to what we talked about with Vegas.
I understand.
Now, you look at all the things the Panthers are doing, the new practice facilities, some of the new facilities, there's some beautiful places to watch the game from now in their rink. They have a couple of great lounges. They have a great whiskey bar, which I'm lucky I didn't find out about during games during the Stanley Cup playoffs. They have, like, that has been what their entire goal has been, is to turn themselves into Tampa East, and they're starting to do it. Like, the people who run that organization right now in terms of, like, the things they are, the ancillary things they are doing around the team, not only the winning's the most important thing, but some of the ancillary things they're doing around the team to make it more of a destination for players, it's paying off for them right now. So that's like Forsling 5.75. I don't know if you were getting him to do that 3 or 4 years ago, but you're getting him to do it now. And like, if he goes somewhere else, the deal's probably not that number. And that's why, and that's a sign for me of what the Panthers are beginning to do. And like I said, I think people are starting to talk about this, but if it's going to change at all, it's going to change at the ownership level. I think the Canadian teams are really worried about it, but it's really unfair because, like, a lot of the U.S. teams would say, that's a Canadian problem. I think the difference now is that some of the U.S. teams in the high tax states are starting to realize, this isn't only a Canada problem. This is a problem for us too.
You know who I could see being and feeling really burned by this? When
Who's
you talk
that?
About Canadian teams, Elliot, the ones that pay into revenue sharing.
Of course.
Are the ones that are looking at this and saying, really? This is getting worse like this, and I'm writing a check for how much? Those are the ones that I can see being real steamed at this one and how it's progressing. Okay, let me run through a couple of the trades that we saw on deadline. I know it might be a few days
old. By the way, let me just say this.
Yes.
You know, Vegas was aggressive with Hurdle, which I thought was a great move for them and one that came by surprise to us. San Jose, the Hurdle deal, it's a sign. They dipped their toe into a rebuild a couple years ago, and then it went completely sideways. They never saw this coming. They never thought this year was going to play its way out like this. And now the Hurdle trade tells us there's no more uncertainty about who they are and what they really are and where they're going. The full teardown is on the way in San Jose, and it has to happen. Sometimes it's like Pittsburgh. Sometimes reality just smashes you in the face. That's what happened to the Sharks this year. And that's where we are. A full rebuild. They know it's their time. It was tough. I don't know if you saw Logan Couture's quotes.
Oh, yeah.
But he's making it sound like he's not sure he's
going
to play next year either.
Well, that's what I wanted to get to. Then what does this mean for Logan Couture? Listen, we saw Mark Edward Vlasic's tweet on Friday, with the sobbing emoji as everyone is leaving around him. But I do wonder about Logan Couture through all of this as well, too.
Well, look, you know, you could tell how rueful he was and how tough it was, but he sure made it sound like he might not be ready to start next year. Number one, you just want him to be able to play.
Yeah. Okay, let me fly through a couple of trades here. A couple of interesting notes from trade deadline. And listen, I'm going to focus in on initially on someone who wasn't traded, and that's Linus Ullmark of the Boston Bruins. Now, after the victory against the Pittsburgh Penguins, there was that interesting interplay between him and Swayman, where Swayman essentially said to him, "You stayed, you're here, you're one of us still," and the big goalie hug. Just your thoughts on the Linus Ullmark situation around trade deadline freeze. There were many that thought that he was gone.
I think he thought it too. I heard it was a really emotional week for him behind the scenes. He made it very clear he didn't want to leave, but I think he was expecting that he would be traded. You know, the thing is here is that I always say this, it's a player's right. If you get it in your contract that you have a no trade clause, it is your right to say no. And I believe he exercised that, and especially in the middle of a season. That, you know, and it's potentially far away from where you are. I completely understand that. And, you know, the report has been LA. I've heard nothing that makes me dispute it. You know, obviously he hasn't commented on that, and Don Sweeney hasn't said anything. And I've heard the Kings are not very happy because that leads to questions about who potentially was involved.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've heard nothing that makes me disbelieve that LA was the team. But I also think that there were some teams in the East that Boston was talking to, potentially about some other situations. And I think there was more than one. I think there were a couple. And I don't know if they were ones he could have blocked or not. I believe in at least one case the deal fell apart. I think it's also possible the team that was talking to Boston said, well, we'd rather do Swayman, and Boston just shut that down, said that's not happening. But there's definitely some conversations about Ullmark that happened over the last couple of weeks that I think will be revisited in the summer and or after the season's over. I don't think this is over. I think Ullmark realizes that. And, you know, the other thing too is I would assume at some point, I don't know when, like every team is different. Some teams it's July 1st, June 30th, whatever it is. But I don't know when Ullmark has to submit his list. But, you know, that's going to be part of this too. And, you know, Boston, I don't think these conversations are over. I would guess that Boston was one of the most disappointed teams at the deadline. I think they, you know, they got Maroon, they got Peak from Columbus. And people told me that Peak is a better player than, you know, what happened to him this year. He just got caught in a numbers game in Columbus. But I think Boston would be one of the more disappointed teams in that they couldn't do some of the things that they wanted to do. And but I think Boston's going to be a really interesting team in the offseason. There's no question about that to me. I don't know if that three-way deal was ever going to happen with Vancouver and Boston and Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I had some people who really disputed that to me. I think Vancouver was really unhappy that some of the Lindholm stuff got out. I think there were some really tough conversations between the Canucks and Lindholm and his representatives about that. I don't think it was easy. I think the Canucks were really unhappy. This is a time of year that's really stressful. Teams get unhappy, players get unhappy, and that definitely happened in Boston's case with, I think, Ullmark, the whole Lindholm situation, and I think they're going to be a really interesting team in the offseason.
Yevgeny Kuznetsov very briefly enjoyed a raise while in the American Hockey League. He was not paying escrow. He was sticking that money in his jeans, not unlike Wade Redden so many years ago, who got sent to the American Hockey League and got a raise because of it. He becomes a member of the Carolina Hurricanes. Scale of 1 to 10, how much of a surprise was this for you?
When I first heard it, it was like 17, but when it came out, it was much less. I heard it about 48 hours before the before it happened, and I was working on it. You know, it doesn't surprise me. It's Carolina. It's like partially because it's the whole market inefficiency thing, and secondly because Rod Brind'Amour, if you look at his history, he's got some pretty positive quotes about Kuznetsov. And, you know, I think the thing is, too, I have no doubt they went to some of their players and said, how do you feel about this? And I think their leadership group accepted. You know, Kuznetsov knows this is it. Like, this is his last chance. If he doesn't make this work, he's done. And, you know, it's a gamble. There's no question. And it's going to go one of two ways. It's going to roll snake eyes, or it's going to roll lucky sevens. And, you know, so far it's off to a good start, but it's all on him. Everybody knows how good he is. Everybody knows how talented he is. But it's his time to show he can still do it. It's also a win for Washington, because there were some people who told me that when I started to hear that this was going on, I had people who were telling me that Washington was going to have to pay Carolina to do it. Like, maybe they were going to have to include a second rounder or something like that. And I think Washington only having to eat half the salary is, they'll say, we'll take that. You know, even if it goes well, we'll take that. So I think that's a big win for the Capitals, too, in terms of what they had to do to make it happen. I don't know if we'll ever get a full picture of what happened with Carolina here at the deadline. We already know a lot. They got Gensel and they got Kuznetsov, but I think they had some other things they were doing too. Like, I heard they had about 35 different things that were going on there that they could have potentially done.
Wow. Bo Byram for Casey Mittelstadt, Colorado and Buffalo. Buffalo has some heavy lifting to do in the offseason. Meanwhile, the Colorado Avalanche got some business done on trade deadline. Casey Mittelstadt, Sean Walker, Brandon Duhaime, Yakov Trenin comes in.
That's
well.
A heavy
so
team.
That is a heavier team ready for some heavy hockey in the Western Conference. I don't know who's going to come out of the West this year, Elliot, but whoever it is, it's going to be bruised. It's going to be bruised.
That first round of playoffs is going to be
so good.
Incredible. So good. Like, absolutely incredible, that first round of the playoffs. And I don't know how anybody is going to wager on that. Like, it is going to be impossible to predict some of those series. You know, Colorado got meaner. There's no question about that. They added a lot of beef. Duhaime plays hard. Obviously, Trenin plays hard. I think Trenin was on Toronto's radar. I think that was one of the teams that was looking at Trenin. You know, I got to say this about Nashville, too. Like, for everybody they moved, they got someone to replace them. You know, I just heard the Trenin negotiations were really tough. So, you know, Carrier, you know, conventional wisdom is you get rid of guys like that because we weren't sure that they, and I don't even know if they're 100% sure they're going to be able to get an extension done, but they held them. Like, Nashville acted like a team that wants to make the playoffs and wanted to reward its players. But I really like Colorado's moves. They weren't the sexy moves of what Vegas did, but I think they filled a lot of holes. You know, the Byram deal is pretty simple. Bo Byram, I think eventually they knew they were going to lose him. They knew that as long as Makar was there, that Byram, who was a really good soldier and a really good player for a long time, including a great playoff run when they won the Stanley Cup a couple of years ago, that eventually he was going to say, you know what, I want to be the number one guy. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Yep. I think it's perfectly understandable. The best want to be the best. And I think they knew that the clock was ticking with him. And in Mittelstadt, they wanted a number two center who could be a 50, 60 point guy. And they think they've got one now. And, you know, it's funny. We're going to have an interview with Alex Tuck that's going to drop in a couple of days. And, you know, Tuck really talked up Mittelstadt. I don't know if they, I'm curious to know now if he had any idea that this was potentially happening, because we taped the interview the night before the trade. And he really talks up Mittelstadt in terms of his hockey sense. And Colorado just thought he was the perfect fit to play right behind MacKinnon. And it's going to be interesting to see. Buffalo's talking like this handedness thing doesn't matter, but you know, like, they've got five lefties, including Johnson. It's going to be interesting to see what this means long-term for them. And so, and you know, it's funny, like, an hour before the trade, I was talking on your show about how some of the Buffalo guys were telling me how Mittelstadt was really tight with guys like Dahlin.
They loved them.
So
they loved them.
It's
yeah.
a huge, huge deal. Huge deal. I think I completely understand it from Colorado's side. I understand why you'd want a guy like Byram on your team on Buffalo's side. I'm just curious to see what it's going to mean for the Sabres roster construction. It's like the first step. You can mm-hmm. see there's going to be more here from Buffalo.
The one thing that I shouldn't say positive about, but I have strong feelings about, how's that? Rasmus Dahlin, now with Kalaposo gone, he's the next captain. He's the next captain of the Buffalo Sabres.
You don't think there's any chance it's Tuck?
I'm just feeling the whole thing's being done around Rasmus Dahlin.
I mean, I can't argue with you on there. I can't argue. I was just wondering if it was going to be Tuck.
Oh, he's wearing an A now.
But it's not like Dahlin's a bad choice.
So Colorado, interesting. So in the Sean Walker deal, they sent Ryan Johansson to the Philadelphia yes. Flyers. What's going to happen here, Elliot? This is an uncomfortable one.
Well, initially when it happened, I didn't think there was any chance that Johansson was going to play there. He was going to be waived. And when he cleared, that he was going to go to the minor leagues, or they were going to find a place for him in the, whether it was in Lehigh Valley or somewhere else. And then I understand that there was some attempt at, you know, also don't forget Tortorella and Johansson, they have a complicated history to say the least.
Yes.
And then I heard that there was some attempt at reconciliation. Like Johansson indicated that he would like to make it work and he wanted to play in the NHL and play for the Flyers. And I heard the Flyers were willing to have the conversation, and then came word that Johansson's battling something, whether an injury or what the case was. And so now that's all on hold. And I think at the time of the deadline, like some of these things get thrown into the background. It'll be interesting to see where this goes, because Johansson would probably be bought out at the end of the year. And if you're injured, you can't be bought out. There was a pretty famous situation a couple of years ago where a team was going to put a player on waivers to buy him out, and they made a courtesy call. And what they claimed was that right before the waiver deadline, the agent told the team that the player had suffered an injury during training, and therefore they couldn't buy him out. And the team complained to the league about it. And the league said, you know, sorry, if there's a legit injury there, you can't do it. So, like, that's a thing. So we'll see where this all goes. But, you know, also, too, there's some hard feelings there just in general, because Johansson is represented by Kurt Overhart, and Kurt Overhart represents Cutter Gauthier, or because he's in the NCAA, he's Cutter Gauthier's family advisor.
You got to turn the business card. You got to flip the business card. On one side it says agent. On the other side it says family advisor. Make sure you're showing the right one.
Although in the NIL age, I don't even know if it
That's
matters
a good point.
Anymore.
Yes.
But right. Whatever. Let's just keep him eligible.
We'll play along. We'll play the game. Yeah. Okay.
Let's just keep him eligible.
Okay.
And so there's some hard feelings there, and people wonder how much that plays into all of this, but that we'll see where that goes with Ryan Johansson and Philly.
Okay, a couple more real quick. Tyler Toffoli goes to the Winnipeg Jets. Your thoughts on what Kevin Cheveldayoff did around deadline?
I really liked the Jets deadline. I thought they had a really good deadline. I think that that's, I mean, despite what happened in Vancouver on Saturday night when they got punished, I think they had a really good deadline. I liked the Toffoli ad. I really liked the Colin Miller ad. There was a lot of competition for Toffoli. I heard Edmonton was in there. Vancouver was in there. There were a lot of rumors about LA, but I just don't think LA was also interested in Riley Smith. They just didn't have room to do anything. But on the morning, the morning of the deadline, I heard that Winnipeg made a massive pitch, and they obviously got the deal done, that they worked the hardest to get it done. So I really like Winnipeg's deadline. I think he's going to be a perfect fit for them. Again, I have no idea who's going to win this conference in the playoffs, but I really liked it for them. I thought it was a I thought it was a great pickup. And, you know, the other team too, like I'm going to be curious when this year is over, I'm going to be very curious about what Edmonton did not do in terms of, I think they had a few irons out there. I mean, obviously they were around on Tanev, but I think there were a couple others. And, you know, I think they considered some subtractions from their team, ultimately decided not to do it. I know everybody's kind of talking about CC, and I mentioned on the Chicklets pod last week that I think some players had indicated they'd prefer to have CC kept around, but I don't think he was the only one. I think there were others they considered subtracting. You know, the thing is too, is like, I heard the Calgary veterans, they made it pretty clear they didn't want Markstrom traded anywhere. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think occasionally, you know, teams, organizations will listen to their players, but not always. And I think if there were really things that could have happened that these two teams could have done, they probably would have done them anyway. What it says to me is that there just wasn't anything put in their way that they felt the need to do that for. A tough weekend for Calgary, too. They really got hammered in their two games in Florida and Carolina after the deadline.
Yeah. Tough there. You know, you mentioned the San Jose Sharks about half an hour ago, although it feels like 3 hours now. This thing is already going Broadway. Anthony DeClaire goes to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Matt Dumba goes to the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think we're all wondering about Noah Hanifin going to the Tampa Bay Lightning. How did you see Julien Brisebois at deadline?
Well, I think he was really disappointed he didn't get Hanifin. I think he thought he was going to get him. If Hanifin had a total no trade clause instead of a partial one, he ends up in Tampa. But because it was a partial one, I think that it worked out the way it did, where Calgary had an out and they took the one to Vegas. Like, you know, Craig Conroy, he's a very nice person, but don't underestimate his competitive nature. And the people he works around, Dave Nonis, Don Maloney, especially Don Maloney, they are very competitive people. And I, you know, you have to think that Calgary liked the return they got, but deep down, it wouldn't surprise me if a bit of this was too, hey, we're not going to let everybody dictate to us. We're going to dictate some of this as well. And I heard Tampa was really disappointed they didn't get Hanifin. That was a guy they wanted and thought they were going to get. I like the moves for Duclair and Dumba. Like, one thing about Dumba in particular is he's very emotional in a good way. Duclair is fast. Tampa can use speed. But Dumba too, I like, especially like Dumba's a guy, you know, it's funny. Someone was talking about Dumba. I think I mentioned it in one of the previous pods. There's sometimes in non-emotional games where he's just not as good as he can be. But when the emotion is high, he really gets into it. And I think sometimes when you're like Tampa and you need a bit of a jolt, or you're struggling, or you're worried you're getting a bit stale, Dumba's good for that. And like the same thing, Zucker, I think he'll be perfect for Nashville. But I like the Dumba acquisition too for Tampa, because I think he'll give them an emotional jolt.
Okay, one final thing here. So the New York Islanders continue to refuse to lose, and on Sunday handed it to the Anaheim Ducks. 6-1 is the final score there. All of a sudden, the Islanders, Elliot, are in. Don't look now.
I always think of Al MacInnis around the trade deadline. How is this going to go in your room? Because there are teams, you never know if a team is going to say, add something, show us you believe in us. And there are other teams who are like, we don't need anything, show us you believe in us. And Lou Lamoriello didn't do anything. And if you're Patrick Waugh, you're selling this to your guys as, because Waugh is the emotion king. He knows, he's the psychological master. He knows how to do this. I guarantee to you, he walked into that room and said, guys, your GM believes in you. He didn't add, but he didn't subtract. You know, I wrote on Tuesday or Wednesday that Lou Lamoriello never backs down. Then he gave a scrum where he was like, give up. Are you joking? So it was just perfect Lamoriello. But I guarantee to you, he walks in there and says, guys, maybe we didn't add, but we didn't subtract, which is proof we believe in you. If we don't make the playoffs, it's proof that the problem wasn't the organization, it was you guys. So you know that's red meat to some of those guys. And the thing about Wise, he's got them believing. I always bet on the teams with the best goaltending. And you look at this time of year, you look at Detroit, you look at Philly, you look at all these teams they're chasing. Islanders have the best goaltending. The best goaltending. And you know who's really had a good year this year, who I don't think that gets enough recognition for it, is Cal Clutterbuck. He scored the last goal in Anaheim. Boy, he has had a really nice season.
So there you go. Good on the Islanders. Winners of six games in a row, now tucked into a playoff spot. We'll see where this one heads. That will not sit well with Steve Yzerman and the Detroit Red Wings, Elliot. Not by a long shot. Let me ask you now, before we get to break Montana's thought line on the other side. Now the trade deadline has taken our eyes away from a story as big as the Arizona Coyotes. Does the focus start to sharpen again on the Arizona Coyotes?
Yes.
And their situation in the league?
Yes, it does. We were sent a story tonight, and I want to thank the tweeter, Brooks D. Simpson.
Regular tweeter, the podcast.
Oh, really? Okay. Nice.
Oh,
thanks,
yeah,
Brooks.
Yeah. He sends stuff all the time. He's a great guy.
He sent us a story from News 12 Arizona that
it's
there
Bram
could
Resnick.
Be the meeting on Thursday. The Arizona Land Department and the minimum sale price is $68.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
So even if that happens, the auction date would be 10 weeks later, possibly in late May or early June. So what we've got here, Jeff, is parallel worlds. World A is they go to auction and they win it. And world B is either the auction doesn't happen or they lose it. Mm-hmm. They have to be preparing, the NHL and the Coyotes have to be preparing for both at once. That's what's going on. There's World A.
Buckle up. Yeah.
You win the auction. There's World B. You lose. What next? Did you ever see Sliding Doors with Gwyneth Paltrow? This is a real,
yes.
It's a good movie.
Yes.
This is a real life Sliding Doors.
I just wonder how, I know all the contingencies are probably being prepared, just how quickly you can pivot if you're the NHL or the Coyotes for that matter, if they don't win the auction.
It's going to be like Lego. If this happens, insert everything here. If that happens, insert everything here.
I love your analogies.
They're terrible.
Okay, Elliot, before we get to the Montana's thought line, one thing that we should remark upon, because it is very much in the spirit of this podcast, God bless you, John Hines. I love when teams go for it. And in this situation, it could have cost them the extra point in overtime if it had gone wrong. But they're tied in overtime against the Nashville Predators. They pull Marc-Andre Fleury for the 4-on-3, and they score. And as we all know now, if they hadn't have been successful and they got scored on, they would have lost the extra point.
What'd you think? I knew that was right up your alley.
I loved it. But I
like
the
big brass ones of the move. That's what I liked.
I loved it, but then I think by now you know me well enough to know that I love situations where you're forced into a decision And that's why I love things like, you know, choose your opponent in the opening round of the playoffs. I love forced decisions like this. So knowing that Minnesota needed 2 points here, they really had to gamble. And good on John Hines for doing it. It doesn't sound like Matt Boldy knew the consequence could have been the extra point that they had already earned by getting into overtime. But nonetheless, perfect shot by Boldy. Completely perfect shot. And the one thing that I had wondered is, you know, do the guys all know the rule? And if they do, who has the stones to take the shot? Because if you miss,
you have a lot of stones to take it when you don't know the exact consequences. So that really helps. It's like the Super Bowl this year. Like, not every player realized the overtime rules, which made it, like, especially considering a game of that magnitude, that not everybody would know those rules. But I loved it. I thought it was great theater. I like to see people rewarded for those kinds of decisions. I remember when I found out about this, it was a game a long time ago when Peter Laviolette was coaching the Islanders in Toronto in a big game late in the year, and it was tied, and he didn't pull his goalie in overtime, and it was like 5 seconds with the faceoff at the other end. And Pierre LeBrun and I were the last two in the scrum, and we said to him, did you all think about pulling your goalie? And it had been a tough game and a tough year, so Laviolette wasn't in a great mood. And he looked at us and goes, we could basically tell he was looking at us like, you guys don't know the rules. But he just looked at us and said, you can't do that. And then he walked away. And Pierre and I looked at each other like, what do you mean you can't do that? And someone overheard, I can't remember who it was, but I think it was one of the players. And he came to us and said, can't do that because if you give up that goal, you lose the point in OT. And so this has to be about 20-something years ago, and we had no idea. We had no idea. So that's when I first learned about the rule. Like, there were people tweeting at me today saying, what kind of hockey guy are you, you moron? You get 1 point if you lose in overtime. A lot of people didn't know that rule. I'm not making fun of anyone because I didn't know the rule until a coach told me. But there's two other things I think about here in this Predators Wild shootout. Number one, going for it like that with the empty net, it just fits Bill Guerin. You know, if there's any GM that would back his coach doing that, it's Bill Guerin. The other thing here, and I'll bet the Wild knew this, is that the Predators have gone to 2 shootouts this year. They've won both, and they're 5-for-5. So I'm going to bet that deep down, the Wild knew if the Predators went to a shootout, they're good at it, and the Wild could lose.
All right, speaking of rules, we usually get rules questions on the Montana's Thought Line. That's next on 32 Thoughts. Listen to the 32 Thoughts podcast ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple, and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.
Time now once again for the Montana's Thought Line. Montana's Barbecue and Bar, Elliott, Canada's home for barbecue.
Try the ribs.
32thoughts at sportsnet.ca is the email, by phone 1-833-311-3232. Before we get to questions, here is a long distance story, Elliot, that I think you'll...
Oh, wait a sec. Before we get to this, I have a thought line question for you.
Oh, geez. Okay.
How young is too young to take someone to go see Bill Burr?
I think it all depends on how mature the kid is. Why are you considering taking your son to Bill Burr?
So this is the thing. Pat McAfee, who I love,
yeah,
was tweeting that he saw Bill Burr in Indianapolis on Saturday night, and he said the show was fantastic.
Yeah, no surprise.
So I look to see when Bill Burr is coming in or near Toronto.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out Sunday night, which is tonight for the recording of this podcast, and yesterday for those of you hearing this podcast, he's playing in Detroit. So I was thinking, I'm decompressing a bit this week. Spur of the moment. Ooh. Let's go see Bill Burr in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Max has to come with us.
Yep.
Steph put the kibosh on this.
Ooh.
She said, and my son is 12.
Yep.
Steph put the kibosh on this. And I don't know. I put up a fight.
See,
but I lost.
I get it. I would. My boys are 14 and 12. I would. And mainly because they love stand-up comedy. And they love jokes. Like, they're at that age where it's past the dad pirate jokes. And they're into, like, getting into grown-up jokes. So I would. I don't know if that makes me a bad parent. Maybe it does to some. But I would take my boys. But again, I would, to be honest with you, I would do what you have done, and I would defer to Claire on this one.
Yeah, I conceded.
There's no win in fighting, Elliot. Just resistance is futile. Just take the L.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. All right.
Just wanted to hear your opinion.
No, I mean, I would have done the same thing that you did. I would have taken
put up token resistance.
Token resistance, knowing that, you know, it's a pretty thin veil you're wearing and you're going to get exposed and the answer is going to be no. Okay, here's a long distance email. I love this one. Marku from Finland. All right, I love this story. I can only imagine what it must have been like in the rink when this happened. Marku from Finland. Hey guys, greetings from Finland. Love listening to your pod. We'll try the ribs if I ever get there. Excellent. Not a question, but a story on the topic of referees forgetting the number of the penalized player. Hmm. So more than 10 years ago in Tampere, Finland, a local team, Tappara, had a delayed penalty coming for a long time. When the play was whistled off, the ref truly had forgotten the number of the penalized player. So he went to the bench and asked Tappara's captain, Jani Ojanen, remember him? New Jersey Devil?
Oh, yeah, I remember him. Jani Ojanen.
Yeah. Who the player was. And Jani said, number 2. And the referee skated over to the officials and loudly told everyone, Tappara, number 2, 2 minutes for tripping. The officials looked at the ref, waved him over, and pointed at the rafters. And there was Tappara, number 2, which had been raised there for Mr. Kalevi Numanen, Finnish national and dad of the one and only Teppo Numanen. Don't remember if Jani Ojanen got a misconduct for that, but hilarious it was. Keep up the good work.
You know what? I don't know that I would give a misconduct for that. I would have to say good one.
I love that story.
I would simply have to say that's a good one. Ojanen, he played for the Devils. I think he scored like 20 goals one year.
Yeah. Yes, he did. Jani Ojanen. I hadn't heard the name in years until Marku from Finland sent along this one. So thank you for that one, Marku. Okay, so to some of the questions. Now, some of these are framed because they came in before trade deadline. So you'll hear things like this. Guillaume from Calgary. Happy trade deadline week to Elliot, Jeff, and Dom. Love the pod. With all the rumors related to Jacob Markstrom specifically, in your experience in the industry, is the general consensus, pet peeve, it's just consensus, from players that they like to be kept in the loop if they are potentially moving, or do they like to have the news broken to them once the deal is confirmed, Elliot?
Okay, there's two ways to look at that answer. There's the teams and there's also the player. I think a lot of players, particularly if you're married with a family, the moment that you hear a name, or your name, I should say, you want to know. You'll ask your agent, you'll ask the team, what's going on out there. You will have situations like that. You have some players, and I would say it's in the minority, they don't want to know at all. I think a lot of players, particularly if you're married with a family, you want to know. And also, it can really depend, Jeff, on what team you play for. I think one thing we're really learning about this league, if we haven't learned it already, is that depending on where you are and the amount of coverage that you get, your name tends to be out there a lot more than some other teams. Like, there's some other teams that don't get a lot of coverage, or the microscope isn't as high on them, so you tend not to hear as much. So I think it depends on the player. It depends on how much your name is out there. And it depends on, you know, do you have a family, or are you a single guy who just doesn't care? I think for teams can be very different. You know, also it could depend on, do you have a no move clause or a no trade clause? Does the team have to come up to you and say, hey, we're considering something? So that is obviously a huge factor on it. You know, some teams, they will tell a player, hey, you should know this. There are other teams who tend to be very guarded about it because they don't want it to affect their players or their teams unless they absolutely have to. And I think the other thing here is there were a number of players at this deadline who had their wives or their partners were pregnant or about to give birth or just had given birth. I think Venberg was in that situation. Adam Henrique was in that situation. Nick Bjugstad was in that situation. And there's another player who asked me to keep it private, but who was in that situation too. And, you know, I said to, when Anaheim came through Toronto, I was talking to Henrique about it. And I said, I figured you would have planned it better. And he laughed and said, do you think we plan anything? Like, I kind of got a good laugh out of that. But There was one player I know of who, through his agent, went to the organization and said, look, my wife is due around this time. I'd really appreciate if you can, if you didn't move me. And the organization acceded to that request. They did. Now, that can't always happen. You know, Henrique was traded. Venberg was traded. Bjugstad was not, and everybody's different. You know, some people understand this is part of the business. Some people ask for, hey, it would be better for us if you didn't. And I do think, you know, I think in a lot of those situations, it can come down to what the offer is. Some teams will say, yes, we didn't get anything that would even make us think about doing it, and so we appreciate your request. But there are times where teams say we didn't want to do it, but the offer we got was so good that we had to do it. So I think all of those things kind of play into it. And I would say every individual is different, and yes, many organizations are different.
Guillaume, thanks a lot for that question and the very thorough answer. Well done, Elliot. I can tell that you've rested since Friday, by the way.
I'm feeling better now. I have to say that. A funny story. So Friday night, someone organized a dinner, and I was like, I don't think I'm in the ability to do this. Like, my brain is completely fried. And they're like, they're like, don't worry, we'll go for dinner at 8 and then we'll leave at 10 and come back home. I fell asleep and I missed him leaving the hotel. And I said, you know what? I'm going to pass. I feel terrible. And I got a text from him at 11:30 saying, good thing you didn't come. So I knew I made the right call there.
Is a picture of him leading the conga line through the saloon? Is that one of those situations?
Pretty much, yes.
All right, tie around the forehead. Okay, good thing I stayed home. Okay, this comes from Brent. This is a philosophical question, a speculative question, a hypothetical situation here, Elliot. From Brent, what do you guys think of allowing players to be loaned to other teams like in soccer? I think the current rules in soccer don't allow the player to play against a team he belongs to. Could you imagine the speculation and fun the media and fans could have if let's say, the Blackhawks wanted to get Bedard some playoff experience and loan him to the Toronto Maple Leafs for the remainder of the 2024 season, or if the Montreal Canadiens loaned Caulfield to the Oilers for the same reason? How crazy would trade deadline be if loaners were part of the picture? What kind of return could the teams get if they loaned a Bedard or Caulfield or Rasmus Dahlin or Brady Tkachuk? I will always remind people, this used to be a thing in the Canadian Hockey League in junior.
Where for the Memorial Cup, right?
You could loan goaltenders. So Karada Mikhailov went from Sherbrooke to Cornwall.
Oh, what a name. What a
like
memory.
That one?
Karada Mikhailov. Holy That's cow. Right.
Hey, we had Yanni Ullianen earlier. I got to raise
That's
my
right.
name. Pat Riggin. Was another one
who
went
Pat
from
Riggin.
the Knights to the 67s. Mike Vernon, you've talked about before, Hall of Famer now from Calgary to Portland, and our good friend and colleague, John Garrett. And this is the one I think that you always raise, going from Peterborough to Montreal.
I think John Davidson was another one.
Yes, he was loaned to Edmonton, to the Oil Kings. Absolutely. Good call there. Good call there. Okay, loners in the, it'll never happen, but do you want to play with this one a little bit?
Well, I think it's a fantastic idea. I really do. I agree with you that it'll never happen, but it would be awesome. It would be incredible.
It would be a lot of fun. And I can think of the social media activity and social media outrage around all of the decisions. Okay, a voicemail. Let's get to Robin in the Netherlands. Oh, check this out.
Hey, Jeff and Elliot. Robin here from Amsterdam, Netherlands, actually. I have a question for you. Is there a time limit where a player can be traded or put on waivers after they have entered the NHL assistance program? I just didn't know if there was like a 6 month after we can't trade him because he has had this help and everything like that from the program. Anyways, thanks for doing such a good job. Take care.
All right,
it's a good
Robin.
Question. I'm assuming this is coming up because of Kuznetsov and Washington the day after it was announced that he was out of the program and allowed to rejoin the team for practice. They waived him. I don't know that there's any steadfast rule against it. And to be honest, if the player agrees to it, I don't think there would be any issue at all. But I don't know, Jeff, that there's any steadfast rule against it. I think if you did something that the player didn't approve of while they were in the program, you'd probably be bracing for an avalanche of criticism.
While it may seem tasteless, trading someone while they're in the NHLPA Players Assistance Program, teams are allowed to do it. You are allowed to trade a player while they are in the assistance program. Again, it may seem tasteless, and I understand that, but you are allowed to do it. Okay, let's get to, and that's a very good question, by the way, Robin. Kevin, hello, fellas. I know you're busy with trade deadline approaching. Again, this is from last week. My question relates to three-team deals. How do teams normally get a third team involved? My assumption would be that two teams talk about a deal, but for whatever reason, it doesn't work, so they engage a third team. Does a GM or both GMs send out a league-wide text asking for help? I would think that would be a no-no since the buying GM would want to keep the trade on the down low. Thanks, good work on the pod. The dynamics of the three-way deal, Elliot.
Well, first of all, you know who can do it and who can't, right? So you probably have a list or a note of what teams you can contact, and you probably contact them directly. And, you know, the other thing is, too, is there's kind of a chart. I don't even know if it's an actual chart, but everybody has something where you look at all of the deals that have happened and what the amount of retention is and therefore what the price should be. Now, that doesn't mean you can't haggle or negotiate based on that, but generally everyone knows if, say, you're eating $500,000, what's that worth? Now, there's a couple of them that are really different. You know, San Jose is going to be eating 17% for 6 years, right?
Yep.
So that can be a different conversation. It doesn't look like that was a huge impediment to that trade, but it can be a different conversation. With Calgary and New Jersey, there was also a bit of a difference on, you know, Calgary would have had to eat probably about, if that trade had happened when it was talked about, they probably would have had to eat about $5.5 million or so. So that becomes a different conversation. But a lot of the ones that are for short-term rentals or you know, maybe a little over a year, those ones are kind of, I don't want to say fixed, but everybody knows what the targets are. But yeah, the way it goes is, you know who can eat money, you know who's willing to eat money. Those teams let it be known that they're willing to eat money, and you get in touch with them.
All right, very good. And that's it for this week's Montana's Thoughtline, brought to you by Corrado Mikalev and Yanni Ujanin. Always a good day when you can say these rather obscure names around the NHL. The Montana's Thoughtline, Montana's Barbecue and Bar, Canada's home for barbecue. We're back in a moment. Before we get back to our regular programming, we need to talk about our partner, Montana's Barbecue and Bar.
Taco Bout? Really?
That's right. With $5 tacos available every Tuesday, satisfy any taco craving when you try their seasoned grilled chicken, Mexi spiced beef, kapow shrimp, or mixed veggie options.
Mix and match to try them all or add one to the side of your favorite Montana's item. $5 tacos at Montana's Barbecue and Bar every Tuesday. Some conditions apply. Visit montanas.ca for details.
You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.
Okay, Elliot, wrapping up another podcast here, 32 Thoughts, presented by the GMC Sierra.
Check under the hood.
I just want to shout out, and I think you're the same. What happened to check your oil? Now it's check under the hood?
So Thomas Hickey texted me and said you should do a different one every time. And I listen to whatever Thomas Hickey tells me, so I just did it.
All right, that's fair. That's fair. So we've got check your oil and check under the hood. And thank you to our friends at GMC. Wanted to shout out and congratulate Lou Nanny. Now, you know that Lou Nanny is one of my favorite people, and I can still recall my father saying to me, geez, I would have been like 12 years old. I remember he said, son, the smartest person in hockey is in Minnesota. And he meant Lou Nanny. So after 60 years of calling the Minnesota High School State Championship, okay, Lou calls it a career. Elliot, he started this, I didn't mind you, when he was still a player, in 1964. 1964, Lou Nanny's still a player, and he's calling the Minnesota State High School Championship, wow, which is an outstanding hockey tournament. His highlights, as he's talked about before, seeing his son Marty score the championship-winning goal in 1984 for Edina. His two grandkids in the tournament also winning championships, Tyler Nanny and Vinny Letteri as well, both winning state titles. I've always maintained he's the best NHL president the league never had. A wonderful hockey mind, brilliant marketer, really progressive thinker. You've heard me say this before, like I just reference, like, somewhere in his career, he should have been leader of the NHL, either as a president as they were then or a commissioner as we know now. I always say that Lou Nanny should have been that guy in the NHL. But congratulations to Lou. 60 years, Elliot. Started in 1964 calling these games.
And you know what I said to him? You could still do it.
Of course he could.
And, you know, it's not like anybody was forcing him to say, okay, you have to go. But I guess everybody reaches a point where they say it's time. And I'm glad he's getting to call his own shot.
Absolutely. Did it his way. The great Lou Nanny. Congratulations, sweet Lou from the Sioux. Thanks for joining us once again on 32 Thoughts, the podcast.
You know, one of the things the solar eclipse, remember that, reminded us is people will travel to have unique experiences, see things, and be part of events. We all saw how people congregated in areas that had the best view, the best safe view. And they all had to stay somewhere, and many used Airbnb. I want to share something with you I was once told. One of the wisest things you can do when you host an Airbnb is find events in your area and let people in that community know that your place is available for out-of-towners. Many did this with the eclipse. You can do this as well. Your home could be an Airbnb. Seriously, it doesn't have to be your whole place. I mean, it could be. You'd be surprised what people are looking for when they travel. It's simple and it's really, really smart. You might want to think about it. You could be sitting on a whole new revenue stream. Concerts, sporting events, conferences. People are always on the move. Your home may be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.ca/host.